This is Second Nature to Love You, First to Die, written by Shasta Firecracker and read by Flower Parish. This is a Star Wars Rebels fic, rated for teen and up audiences, in which the creator chose not to use archive warnings. It features the relationship between Alexander Kallus and Garazeb Zeb Aurelios. This is part one of the Cold Love series. Summary. 2 years after the fall of Lassan, Zeb is barely functioning as a gladiator slave in the Haxian Brood's fighting pits. On auction day, a strange guard arrives to break Zeb out, whether Zeb wants it or not. AU. What if Kallus defects on his own after Lassan, and upon hearing rumors that there is a surviving captain of the Honor Guard on Ordo Aris, sets out to rescue the one being in the galaxy he most deserves to be killed by?
Not whole, not wholly, separate but syncopated, single in our nature and because of the times. Not a word was said when the lights came on or a glance given pause at the cost of our desired wrongs. It's second nature to love you, it's first to die, and we were killed upon waking to the life we weren't prepared to live or about to realize. We were killed upon the pavement, Bonnie were immortalized.
Keep your head down, says the guard walking behind Zeb. Don't look the buyers in the eyes.
Zeb's still woozy from the concoction of drugs delivered half an hour ago by the same man currently standing just behind Zeb's left shoulder, who had woken him in his cell with a no-nonsense needle to the neck. The man is touching the center of Zeb's back lightly with two fingers to push him in the correct direction. A less rough touch than usual, but Zeb supposes sale days aren't the same as fight days. The maze of tunnels through Ordo Aris stink of decay and cold rot. Zeb can see his breath in little puffs of white. The brood underling leading him to the arena is probably warm enough in his full uniform and voice-modulating helmet, but they've forced Zeb back into his captain's garb. Or part of it. Someone's ripped the sleeves off his tunic and shredded up the bottom hem. And instead of his actual greaves and bracers, they've wrapped dirty bandages that stink of old blood around his hands and forearms, feet, and ankles. He looks suitably barbaric. He's fought in the arena a dozen times already, not by choice. He couldn't really do anything but fight after strong injections of stimulants, encouragement from electroprods to get into the arena, and then being abruptly surrounded by murderously frenzied carnivorous animals from all over the galaxy. He's kept himself alive so far by the skin of his teeth. If he's grateful for anything at all, it's that he hasn't been thrown in with a sapient opponent yet, but he figures it's just a matter of time. Especially now that he's up for auction. A fighter owner will want a return on investment, and you don't create the kind of long odds that pay big credits by putting the last living captain of the Lassan High Honor Guard in a pit with Kashyyyk's everyday wildlife, no matter how nasty the spiders are. Zeb's under no illusions that moving from Sork Tormo's de facto ownership to the property listings of some arena high roller will change anything about his circumstances. Many of the long-term fighters in Ordo Aris are stabled there remotely by owners who probably haven't seen them since the day they got snapped up at auction. Sork gets his cut in fees and out of the betting books. The owners pay Sork to maintain fighter upkeep to standards high enough that the fights will at least be worth watching, and the saps and whales in the audience keep pouring credits into the operation at rates that keep the books hot and the stands screaming. The walls sway past, streaking in Zeb's vision. Whatever the guard gave him wasn't the usual stimulant, that's for sure. Maybe he was deemed too dangerous to be auctioned without sedation. One of his toes catches on his other ankle, claw sticking in the stringy bandaging that's there just for looks. He stumbles a little, barely rights himself, and braces for the prod he expects to hit him in the lower back or kidney. None does. The hand against his back goes palm flat for a moment, then retreats again to the lightest touch. Zeb's cuffed and collared, but it still strikes him as odd that the guard is being so hands-off. Isn't he worried about Zeb fighting back? Or does he think the chemical restraint is strong enough? It doesn't really feel that strong. Zeb clenches his fist to test and finds that he's still more or less capable of fine motor control. The injection is making him woozy and off balance, but it's not a muscle relaxant. "What'd you give me, shot of whiskey?" Zeb slurs to the guard. "Prefer it by mouth."
"Don't look the buyers in the eyes,"
the guard repeats. "Thought I was supposed to look dangerous," Zeb mutters. "Like an animal."
"If you look them in the eyes, they may notice irregular pupil movement and realize I gave you the wrong drug."
Zeb's stomach drops to the floor. "What the criff?" He jerks his bound hands around like he's going to turn on the guard, but he pauses when the hand on his back goes flat again, palm between his shoulder blades, and the guard says,
"If you want to make it out of here, do what I say. I don't have the controls to the collar, I can't shock you, and I doubt I could stop you if you wanted to attack. But if you kill me, you lose your chance."
"What?"
"There isn't time. Keep your head down and make it through the auction. Look pathetic, we don't want any high bidders."
Zeb wants to argue, but they're already at the arena loading cells, and the other sets of fighter slaves and guards are getting close enough that they might be overheard. Zeb tracks his muzzy gaze around the other fighters, wondering for a moment if all of their guards are also plants, but then he sees one brood-suited figure pull out a collar control to shock a Trandoshan, who had been tossing their head and huffing. The guard kicks the seizing reptilian in the back of a knee, knocking it to the ground, before yelling at it to stand up. Is Zeb the only one? But wait, why is he taking the guard now standing placidly behind him at his word? It's more likely that he's an agent for some purchaser or rival gang interest, and that the light sedation and instruction to avoid drawing attention is some kind of ploy for credits. For whatever reason, making Zeb look like a losing proposition is going to end up lining this guard's pockets. That's the only realistic explanation. Zeb blinks hard and draws in a deep breath, trying to find his balance and fight off the wooziness of the drug. He's already damned, but he'll be damned even more if he lets some credit-grubbing gang lackey treat him like a doggo that can be spiked into throwing a race. So, when he gets shoved into the loading cells with the other fighters, bumping shoulders and smacking faces with so many unwashed, and, notably, all non-human, bodies, he tightens his muscles and clenches his fists and works himself into a growl to shake off the sedation and gain himself some breathing room. Criff doing what he's told. Criff all these underworld shit heaps and their credits and their commands. The auction whirls past in a chaos of shouting and loudspeaker feedback and the arena's ever-present bass-thudding music. Zeb honestly has no idea what's happening, who's bidding or winning or on what, but he makes an effort to raise his chin and bare his teeth and demand a shred of respect. He hasn't broken yet, and he'll be fucked if being shown off like meat at market will make him forget where he came from. He gets shoved a few steps forward by some brood suits at one point, and in a momentary fit of showmanship, he rips the bandage wrappings off his wrists, twisting his hands within his binders, and stomps them into the asteroid's cold gravel floor, snarling. For half a heartbeat, he thinks he spots one brood guard, indistinguishable from the rest, shaking their helmeted head at him. He can't be sure it's the same guard, but he bares his teeth at them anyway, letting the anger boil. It's all he has. He has no sense of when the auction has ended until he's shock-prodded in the back by one guard, while another uses a snap pull to hook onto his wrist binders and pull him. He stumbles and gets another shock for it, and as he's led out of the arena, he sees that the next tier of loading cells are full of tonight's opening act, bloodbait slaves, and the wildlife they're there to drive into a frenzy. A modulated voice hisses near Zeb's ear.
"You ass! You were supposed to not draw attention."
Zeb turns his face and bares his teeth again. The wooziness of the sedation is all but gone. He pulls a deep breath into his chest, feeling the most himself he's felt in weeks. No artificial rage this time, only the all-natural stuff.
"I am trying to help you,"
says the guard, and Zeb drives an elbow hard into the guard's stomach, just because he's close enough. He doesn't expect it to work, is the thing. But the guard doubles at the waist, coughing out a pained curse, and falls away by a few steps as they march along the corridor, among the flow of other shouting guards and shaking slaves. Zeb waits for the white-hot numbness of the collar, but it doesn't come. The guard really doesn't have a controller for it, does he? Zeb's hopes start to well up. He's clear-headed, decently rested, and potentially free of the shock collar's effects, and he's not currently in a cell. If he acts right now, he might be able to brute force the wrist binders off, grab a guard's blaster, and book it before anyone can react. Another guard calls,
"That one giving you trouble, 565. No,
calls back the one Zeb's starting to think of as his guard, straightening up quickly.
That slot from the mess is giving me pains.
A bunch of other guards grumble or laugh in either agreement or mean-spirited amusement at 565's expense. 565 steps back up in alignment with Zeb, putting his stomach right back in easy elbowing distance. Almost so quietly that Zeb can't hear in the loud hallway, the guard says,
"Do you think you can take the entire brood to get out? Do you even know where the hangar is?"
Of course not. Ordo Eris is a worm-carved maze, and a big damn asteroid at that. Zeb was aware of the Haxian brood and its base since before. He just never thought he'd be here. Other than state trips to Coruscant, he honestly never thought he'd leave Lassan. He wasn't one of the younglings thirsting for adventure. He'd always loved his home and wanted to steep himself in it, to stay and harmonize his life with the seasons and the land, to take care of his loved ones and protect his people. Ash. Zeb looks at the cold, dusty gravel under his feet. Ash, ash, ash. Did he really just flex in front of slavers and think of it as demanding respect? All the strength and determination spills out of him like water. The adrenaline rage he'd worked himself into goes gray and still. It's only been a couple of standard years since Lassan. He'd thought himself unbroken, and maybe the beatings and pain and imprisonment and forced combat haven't broken him, but what exactly does unbroken mean if he can think that there's dignity to be found in being a desirable object for purchase? He watches his chance to make a break for it slip away as he's marched down the corridor. Other fighters split off to their cells, guards with them, most telling raucous stories and laughing and shocking or punching their prisoners just for the fun and power of it. Two fingertips touch his back again, his guard, 565, urging him to turn down the hall that his cell is on. When they're distant enough from everyone else, quietly but very fast, 565 says,
"I wanted to move you out through the decontamination showers with the block sales. Instead, you went and got yourself bought by a Narshadan exotic interests dealer who happens to be one of Tormo's favorite high rollers. Eyes will be on you, and your transfer will be tracked individually."
"What do you care?" Zeb says, flat and barely interested.
"I'll move to my contingency, which you will not enjoy," says 565,
as if Zeb hadn't spoken.
"All you need to know is that in about an hour you are going to have a medical emergency."
"Not too great at acting," Zeb mumbles.
"Acting will not be required,"
says 565, and Zeb feels a sudden, powerful burning in the back of his neck. He coughs out a loud, surprised roar and spins on the guard, who steps backwards much quicker than before, out of reach of Zeb's claws. Zeb sees an injector canister disappearing into the cuff of 565's glove just before he pulls his baton off his belt and cracks Zeb across the knuckles with it.
"In your cell,"
565 barks, easily loud enough to be heard by other guards in the hall, none of whom react. 565 mimes holding something in his palm and thumbing a button. Zeb can see his hand is empty, but no one else is close enough. The pain in Zeb's neck is strong and sharp, and he's definitely not acting when he grabs at it beneath the collar, stuck in a noise between a growl and a whine. To anyone else, it probably does look like the shock collar going off. Zeb stumbles into his cell on beaten in instinct, months of experience informing his body that the pain will stop once he obeys the command. But the pain isn't voltage, and once he's in his tiny cell, his neck just keeps getting worse, the burning spreading down his shoulders and up to his scalp. "Griff, you do to me," he gasps, clutching at his head. 565 steps to the door to seal it. He rapidly mutters,
"Your new owners have already put in the request for a closer inspection. You'll be transferred to their ship very soon, but you'll suffer a massive inflammatory event on the way there. I'll be able to requisition the codes to your restraints, and then I can give you the reversal dose."
"Massive," Zeb wheezes, already feeling himself getting lightheaded.
"Do not speak to anyone," says 565. "Don't fight the next guards that come for you. In just over an hour, you'll be free."
Then 565 is gone, and Zeb is trying not to hyperventilate. Of all the carking things, to have lost his entire homeworld to war was one thing, to have been captured by slavers while drunk off his ass in a trash heap of an Outer Rim spaceport, to have been sold to the Brood as meat for the arena grinder, to have been stripped and shamed and drugged and bet on and now sold again, all of that was bad enough. But there was some part of him that saw the through line of it all, that understood it as a matter of course, maybe even as a punishment he deserved for failing Lasan. There was some part of him that had accepted the inertia of it, that had hunkered down and gotten prepared to see through the next 5, 10, 20 standard years of his life doing just this, over and over, until a nasty enough opponent finally killed him. There was a thoughtless effortlessness to it. And if there were any two things Zeb had not wanted to do since Lasan died, they were think or exert effort. And now, instead of just getting through it one day at a time, he's got some sort of horrific extraction effort going on his behalf, which he never asked for, and he just wants to scream to be left alone to the misery that he earned. Ashla, damn it all. His neck and spine and kidneys and lungs all cripping hurt. The radiating pain peaks at a point just below blinding, leaving him able to stay awake and move around, although his eyes are watering and his limbs are starting to tremble. The idea slices coldly into his stomach that he's going to die. That criffing fake guard injected him with certain death and Zeb just let it happen. Why didn't he turn and tear that guy's head off? Why is he letting this happen to him? Why is any of this happening to him at all? His cell door hisses open again. Two guards come in, one with a snap pole and one with an electro baton. He can't tell if either are 565. They all look the same. All their voices are modulated the same. One says, "Out," and snaps the pole to his wrist binders to jerk him forward. "Feel sick," he manages to say, although his tongue feels thick and slow. The guards don't react. He has to follow or be dragged. He follows, staggering. The forced march makes whatever 565 dosed him with circulate even faster, spreading down his legs and through his chest in an inexorable seep of agony. His vision blurs. He can only focus on picking up each foot and moving in the direction the guards are pushing him. One of them says something, but Zeb can't parse it through the roaring growing in his ears. The shock from the baton against his side barely registers, as he apparently doesn't react fast enough to whatever was said. One of the guards gets right up in his face. Zeb can't understand him. Basic is a second language for Zeb anyway, and between the throbbing in his head and the voice modulator, he's lost all ability to process it. In Lasana, he croaks, "I'm gonna pass out." But he knows it's useless even as he says it. Things go exceptionally blurry then. It starts getting more difficult to take a full breath. He becomes aware of being held upright by another figure, this one half again his height and hard and cold, a droid, one of the Brood's bounty hunter droids, he thinks, and the ground scrapes past beneath him without him having to put effort into walking, so he's being half carried, half dragged. Through running eyes, he sees when they exit a corridor into a far larger space, a room big enough to hold ships, and is that the shimmer of ray shielding in the distance? Hangar, Zeb thinks desperately, sucking for air. He tries to reach up to grab his throat, which is raw and hot and nearly closed, but the snap pole attached to the binders prevents him. One of his legs starts twitching involuntarily, extending to a full kick as he finally sucks as hard as he can, but gets nothing. Crunch of feet on dusty gravel changes to clanging of boots on metal. Voices clamor around him. He's going to die. His vision fills with black spots. His chest is going to explode with need. He's gonna die, and he thought he'd been ready for that, thought that a big part of him had wanted that since the day he left Lausanne, but all he can think now is, no, 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 no. Everything goes black. Blink. Air slams into his lungs with the force of a hydraulic press, and Zeb slams awake just as fast. His heart is racing faster than it ever has. He can't say for sure he isn't still dying, but at least he can breathe. He gasps and gulps at air and swears he can feel it like a solid presence, filling him and shocking agonized life back into limbs that had gone cold. He's utterly disoriented by noise and fast-moving shapes banging around him in a small space. A brood guard trips over him, another steps on his leg. He tries to roll over on his side to guard his core from kicks, still heaving for breath, and in moving, he accidentally sweeps a leg out from under a guard, who smacks into the wall as he staggers to stay up. Above him, one guard lashes out at another with an electrobaton. They're fighting each other, Zeb realizes on delay. He tries to see his surroundings. Small spacecraft, it looks like. Shuttle. Escape pod. There's a bank of controls just ahead of him. Maybe he can get to his feet. He pushes at the floor, wobbles and falls, taking a guard with him. It's the one with the electrobaton. The other guard jumps over Zeb and bodies the off-kilter guard fully to the ground, scrapping for control of the baton like a rabid beast. The two identical figures exchange vicious blows, the unarmed one taking a full voltage jab to the neck at one point before smashing his bald fists into the other's face so hard he shatters the front of his helmet. Zeb gets halfway upright and pulls himself to the console, but he can't parse the readouts. Blurry vision, racing mind, and racing heart. His mouth tastes like metal and, weirdly, onions. He needs a weapon. No matter what's going on with the guards, he needs there to be no guards, so criff 'em both. He starts trying to push himself up again, and a guard appears right next to him, electrobaton in hand, looming taller since Zeb is sitting down, and Zeb's heart rate is already going a million parsecs a minute, so the panic barely registers to him as a flash of reddened out vision, and he lurches to his feet and has both hands around the guard's neck so fast he doesn't even notice he's done it. He's squeezing with a killing efficiency that is only hampered by the brood armor suit. He knows from experience that a bare human neck can be crushed with upsetting ease. The guard manages to smack the baton, full voltage, against one of his wrists, and he has to let go with that hand to wrest the baton out of the guard's grip. Which gives the guard a second, just a second, to bark out in his modulated, flat voice,
"Stop! It's me!"
Zeb loosens his grip, then tightens it again, torn about what he should believe, and the guard lets out a horrid, screaming gurgle, and Zeb lets go at the sound, his nerves shot, stuck halfway between wanting everyone around him gone so he can get some criffing quiet, and being so sick at the brutality of what his life's become that he thinks killing one more living thing might finally break him. The brood guard staggers down to one knee, struggling for air and leaning an arm against the console. He drops the baton and scrambles gloved fingers over his helmet, seeking the catches until he finally flips them loose and drags the helmet off. It hits the durasteel floor with a clank. The man inside is human, as Zeb assumed. One of the pale-skinned ones, speckled all over with brownish dots and flushed red from exertion. The sweat soaking his hair makes it hard to tell what color it is, but Zeb thinks one of the lighter shades, maybe yellow. Lots of facial hair down the sides of his face, absent around his mouth. He's also streaked and smeared all over with blood leaking from his nose and from cuts on his cheeks and scalp, places where hard blows smashed the interior of his helmet into bony areas. His neck, what Zeb can see of it down the collar of his brood uniform, is a whole nebula of angry colors, carrying up nearly to his jawline. He gasps for air for several breaths, while Zeb stands over him dumbly, at a loss for what to do. So hoarse there's barely any voice left, the human says, I'm 5'6"5. Zeb rasps. Yeah. I need, the human croaks, to see the Navi console. He starts shifting like he's going to try to get up. He's starting to shake, his gloved hand rattling against the floor. Zeb reaches down to help him. Not much thought to it, it feels natural to do so. The guard grunts in something like alarm when Zeb reaches for him, maybe not surprising given the strangulation, but between them, despite both being compromised, Zeb manages to get the man to his feet. It's surprising to see a human closer to eye to eye than Zeb sees most of them. He supposes 5'6"5 was the same height the whole time, but it's different, looking at a face instead of that bug-eyed brood helmet. It makes Zeb realize that this man is big for a human, 6.5 feet maybe, and broad too, if the suit isn't bulking him out artificially. Zeb considers his chances of beating this guy in a brawl if it comes back to a fight, and while normally he'd rate himself above any single human being, he doesn't like the idea of this matchup while he's still wired as Criff on whatever he's been dosed with. The electrobaton is still on the floor. Zeb snatches it up with one of his feet, startling 5'6"5 with a sudden motion. Zeb transfers the baton from toes to hand and grips it hard, thumb hovering over the volt switch. 5'6"5 looks at him for a moment, still breathing hard, face twisted up in an ugly grimace of pain. Then, he nods, turns to the console and takes a half step to the side so he can collapse into the pilot's seat, tugging at both of his gloves in turn and tossing them to the floor. 5'6"5 says, "Check the rear storage compartment to arm yourself properly, but please, let me get us clear of brood space before you kill me. It'll make everything much simpler for you." Zeb stares at the back of his sweat-soaked head for a long minute, heart still racing, but finally starting to slow down so that he doesn't feel like he's about to pass out. The baton in his hand is thick, heavy, cold. 5'6"5 is unarmed. Zeb looks down at the other guard on the floor, then shakily kneels to check for life signs. None. 5'6"5 killed him. That places Zeb in a small shuttle with a killer who seems both professional about it and also capable of extreme brutality, unbothered to have smashed another human's face in with his bare hands. But Zeb is armed and 5'6"5 is not, and 5'6"5 seems uninterested in harming Zeb at all. The feeling of his two barely there fingertips in the center of Zeb's back lingers in his memory. 5'6"5 was unwilling to even shove Zeb around. He'd only caused pain with that criffing drug, and then with the baton to stop Zeb from killing him. And wait, his last words replay in Zeb's mind, finally registering. "Before you kill me?" Zeb reaches a shaky hand up to his neck, where the agonizing injection had been, and he pats his neck again, stomach flipping. The collar is gone. He snaps his gaze around the shuttle, taking in the details of the tiny space, and finds the collar and his binders. Obviously, he's not wearing binders anymore. He's moving his hands separately. He hadn't even noticed. The collar and binders are open, not broken. Zeb stares at them for a moment. He turns and looks at the rest of the minuscule space. There is an obvious rear storage compartment, just like 5'6"5 had said. Zeb takes the step and a half to get to it, thumbs the control. His heart rate spikes again at the sight of what's inside. His eyes water, his chest feels thick. He never thought he'd see it again, much less be able to reach out and pick up its familiar weight. Zeb smooths his hands along the bow rifle he hasn't seen for 6 months, taking in the new wear and damage, noting that it hasn't been calibrated properly, that it hasn't been cleaned, but that it's in remarkably good condition, all things considered. Zeb hefts the bow rifle and looks at the back of 5'6"5's head, as bewildered as ever, but maybe, finally, starting to accept that this isn't the worst day of Zeb's life, that something good might be happening to him, insane as that is, and despite the bizarre way 5'6"5 has gone about it. Zeb steps up to the console and lowers himself gingerly into the second flight seat, next to 5'6"5, who doesn't look up at him. Zeb watches the console for a long minute, finally feeling close enough to normal that he can make the mental effort to translate the readouts. There's a muted comms channel lighting up like crazy, so he reaches over and clicks the mute off.
Earned a base immediately. HB565, HB443, respond. Repeat, shuttle BR932K4, you are out of transport bounds,
565 reaches over and mutes the comms again. He says, I have it under control. Zeb watches his hands drag across the console, smearing blood on some toggles. He can tell they're speeding away from Ordo Aeris, and that 565 is digging into the shuttle's core processor programming to brick their broadcast frequencies, which will at least make it harder for frequency sensors to pick them up. But Brood Livery is bright yellow, and Ordo Aeris is in dead space, so it won't be difficult to catch them by heat signature and eyeline alone. If we get boarded, Zeb says, I'm not going back. 565's mouth gets even tighter and thinner, if that were possible. We won't be boarded. He swaps to the engine auto settings and starts dismantling the safety parameters, using an authorization code that Zeb is positive bottom-of-the-barrel brood guards don't qualify for. My ship is in the debris field. They'll still be scrambling a retrieval unit when we jump to hyperspace. Zeb grunts, too tired and still too befuddled by it all to argue. His body seems incapable of making any more adrenaline. He watches the human do insane things that could easily kill both of them with the impassivity of the already doomed. 565 isn't wrong, though. Within 3 minutes, klaxon alarms start going off in the shuttle cabin, but they're already hauling up alongside a small, beaten-up fighter clinging to the side of a chunk of space rock. Looks like an old Republic model seized for small squad deployment, scrapped to hell and back and bearing no livery at all besides ion scoring and frozen, muddy filth. 565 does a bumpy job of aligning the airlocks, giving Zeb the impression that he's not a pilot except by necessity. Ouch! 565 yells over the blaring alarms, which Zeb didn't need to be told. He pulls himself into the new ship with a slight stomach-churning flip in the angle of the artificial gravity. 565 follows and immediately punches the controls to detach. The brood shuttle drifts freely for a moment, then does a drunken wobble back around to reverse trajectory and starts accelerating away. From what Zeb saw, its engines are well on their way to meltdown. Whoever the brood sends out to find the shuttle will definitely find it by heat signature, and then, if they're not very, very fast, they probably won't find anything else ever again. Zeb does not bother to comment on the obvious fact that 565 is not a member of the Haxian Brood. He watches the man shrug out of the upper part of the Brood Guard uniform, letting it hang around his waist and revealing a dark gray body stocking beneath. Zeb flexes his hands around the girth of his bow rifle, feeling a rush of gratitude to be holding it again, a, perhaps unwarranted, sense of safety from the shape of it in his hands. Right, 565 says, walking briskly through the ship to the command console, while Zeb follows. I have a pre-programmed 3-jump scramble to execute, but after that, I recommend making at least 2 more jumps and finding a spaceport where you can exchange the frequency modulator for a new one as soon as possible. I have 5,000 in hard credits and a short list of dead drops you can check as long as you are very careful. He opens a slot on the console and pulls out 6 data sticks. These contain all my remaining leads on Lassan survivors, slim as they are, so you can continue to search if that's your desire. Zeb takes a sharp breath. It's shaky when he lets it out. Hold up, he says. The ship shudders as it clears enough asteroid debris to make its first jump to hyperspace. 565 says, You needn't worry about being arrested for my murder. If you weren't Lassat, you could claim the bounty on me, but unfortunately, the Empire won't pay out to an enemy of the state as recognizable as you. If you'd like, I have files on several known rebel cells who would probably take you in with laurels for dispatching me. Stop talking, Zeb says. Explain better for Criff's sake. 565 turns away from the controls and stands up straight with a small huff, tugging his bodysuit sleeves as if they're a uniform. He falls into what Zeb recognizes as parade rest immediately, meeting Zeb's eyes with a defiant, angry, amber-colored gaze. Garza Borelios, says the human, and Zeb's spine straightens on sheer instinct, as if his old commanding officer were talking to him. last known surviving member of the High Honor Guard of the royal family on Lasan. My name is Alexander Callis, Imperial Security Bureau. I was present as a ranking officer of the Empire at the Siege of Lasan. I relayed orders to use T7 ion disruptors on civilian targets, and I personally took the lives of a number of your kinsmen, so large I lost count. Captain Aurelius, it is your right to kill me where I stand. Perhaps even your duty. Zeb's brain has gone to pure static. He swallows each bit of information with more difficulty than the last. Lasan, ISB, disruptors, civilians, duty. The man in front of him, Callus, he said, Callus, is rigid in his posture, bloodied and sneering, or is that grimace hiding fear? And above all else, it is clear that he does not intend to defend himself. Zeb croaks, no. There's a long beat of silence. Maybe I wasn't clear, Callus says. I am one of the primary architects of the genocide of your people. Yeah, Zeb says, short. Heard ya. You are the single being in the galaxy most deserving of executing me, says Callus. Sounds like it, Zeb agrees. I am inviting you to meet justice. No, Zeb repeats. He walks up to the bridge area, where there are pilot and co-pilot seats facing forward and four passenger seats facing each other in pairs just behind. He takes the co-pilot's seat, too tired to keep standing and uninterested in looming threateningly over Callus. He hears steps behind him, but doesn't even bother to look back, just letting the blue light of hyperspace wash over him in the relative quiet. He aches all over like he's been thrown through several walls. After a few minutes of various shuffling, rustling, and clanking noises, Callus's footsteps approach Zeb. Zeb looks up, already exhausted by whatever the man's going to say. What Zeb doesn't expect is to see Callus fully stripped of his brood costume and now wearing an Empire Gray section of chest armor over his bodysuit and holding a bow rifle at attention with both hands. If it's a matter of honor, Callus says, I won't ask you to strike down an unarmed opponent. We can make it a fair fight. Zeb stares at him. No, he repeats again, mouth dry. The weapon in Callus's hands is an older model than Zeb's, but it looks better maintained. Clean, gleaming. Your grip's wrong, Zeb adds, staring at the way Callus is holding the gun. Callus frowns deeply at him. Guess you've got too many fingers, Zeb concedes, thinking about human hands on a Lasat weapon. He wants to feel disgust, or anger, or anything, really, but he can't. He's so tired and in so much pain. He's been working hard at feeling nothing for so long, and it's succeeded. He's numbed the revelation. After a long, uncomfortable silence, Callus says, yes, it isn't fair yet. We're both injured. He moves away again, and Zeb hears him stowing the bow rifle, shuffling and clanking. When he returns, he's also shed the chest plate. His gray bodysuit is flecked with drying blood, and his neck is turning truly spectacular shades of purple. Callus takes the pilot's seat, not looking at Zeb. Zeb says, why'd you come get me? Just to make me kill you? Callus lets out a breath that sounds annoyed. You should want to. I'm tired, Zeb says. Don't want Krifal right now, but some peace and quiet. Callus doesn't say anything to that. After a minute, Zeb asks, what the hell did you dose me with? And why'd you have such a bantha shit rescue plan? Who are you? I said, Agent Callus, ISB. You're not, Zeb says flatly, if the Empire's got a bounty on ya. A long beat. Ex-ISB, Callus concedes. How's that happen? Zeb says. I disagreed with an order, Callus says, teeth gritted. Strongly. About Lasan? No, Callus says, nostrils flaring. I executed those orders, every one of them. Zeb stares out at hyperspace. Maybe the tiredness is a good thing. Callus's goading can't reach him through the muffling barrier of exhaustion. He only feels vaguely sick. About repeating Lasan somewhere else, he hazards, because he's enough of a realist to know that Lasan was barely a blip on the Imperial radar. He knows he's right by Callus's silence. After a moment, Callus says, "It doesn't matter. I left, and they did it anyway. Anything I failed to stop pales in comparison to what I willingly did." He pauses. "I saw what the disruptors did, you know, and I advocated to keep using them, because I thought an overwhelming display of force would convince the royal family to step down." Zeb bares his teeth in a grimace. He doesn't want to hear this. It isn't riling up anger, but it hurts. "Shut up," he growls. "But leadership wanted them all dead," Callus continues. "Negotiation be damned. They wanted to make an example." "Stop talking." "And I was a willing pawn to that," Callus says. "Eager. It seemed to me that disruptor deaths were quicker than blaster bolts anyway. Perhaps humane." Zeb catches onto Callus's tone at last, an effort at haughtiness, but layered over deep disgust. Zeb closes his eyes. "Not gonna make me kill ya," he says through clenched teeth. Callus gives a frustrated huff. "Why not?" he demands. "You want it too bad," Zeb snaps. "You dump all this on me, and you think I want to help you by giving you what you want." He turns to glare at Callus, and is surprised to see the man's gone ashen and thin-lipped, staring at Zeb like it's never occurred to him that he's an entitled prick. Amazing, really. With the hint of a growl, Zeb says, "I'm gonna sit here in the quiet now, maybe get some sleep, let whatever Criffin sludge you put in me work its way out. I'm not gonna kill anyone on your orders, even you. And you're gonna keep Lassan's name out of your filthy mouth, got it?" Callus is silent. He turns his face away to watch out the viewport for a long moment. Eventually, he just gives one curt nod, stands up, and walks to the back of the ship. Zeb has a feeling this won't be the end of Callus's attempts at suicide by Lassat, but now that he's aware it's what Callus wants, Zeb is thoroughly uninclined to give it to him. Let him suffer, Zeb thinks. Clearly, he thinks death would be a relief, and if half of what he's said is true, relief is the last thing Zeb wants to give the man. Another few black eyes and broken bones, maybe, but certainly not relief. Zeb sinks into the co-pilot's seat, spine cracking, aches worming their way into every inch of his body. The further he moves away from the adrenaline high, the more the pain ramps up. He shifts his grip on his bow rifle, gritting his teeth and trying not to let out any pathetic whimpering. He isn't sure how long it's been when footsteps return to the bridge, and Callus appears beside Zeb's seat. Zeb pries his watering eyes open to look up. The man is holding out a medkit to Zeb with one hand, holding a bacta patch to his neck with the other. "There's one bunk," Callus says. "Take the pain tab and lie down." "What I say about taking your orders," Zeb spits. Callus's expression is completely blank. He just places the medkit on the console, moves to sit in the pilot's chair, and doesn't speak again. After a while, Zeb huffs. The pain tabs are right there, and his last shreds of pride are no match for the throbbing in his muscles. "Carabast," he mutters, and takes the kit. After dry swallowing two tabs, Zeb stands up with a wobble and shuffles his way to the back of the ship. The single bunk is actually a fold-out gurney for transporting field injuries, but it's a place to become horizontal, and that's all Zeb can think about. It has a foam headrest, which is more than the cot in his cell on Ordo Eris had had. As the pain slowly dulls from Zeb's body and his eyes grow heavy, he tries to decide what the hell is actually happening to him and what it means. He has no purpose in the galaxy. Does Callus expect him to just drift like he had before the kidnapping, drinking himself blind until he lays down and never gets up again? Does Callus expect anything of him at all? Clearly, Callus's purpose in breaking him out of captivity had been more to Callus's benefit than Zeb's. Whatever was going on in that ex-imp head, it was thorny and twisted and very dark, and Zeb didn't want any part of it. Except that Callus had mentioned leads on further Lassan survivors. Is that how he'd found Zeb, hunting all over the galaxy for the last shreds of a people he'd nearly wiped out, rescuing them as an act of, what, penance? Maybe. It rings true in Zeb's heart. Callus had also mentioned rebel cells as if he assumed Zeb would want to sign up immediately for another losing fight against the monstrous machine of the Empire. Nausea rolls through Zeb's gut, and he swallows it down with difficulty. Whatever comes next, Zeb can't face it yet. He'll take it a step at a time for now. First, sleep. Then, some food. And another, hopefully more productive, talk with Callus about his intentions. Then, who knows? The galaxy is vast and full of twists and tangles to get caught up in. Zeb's given up on trying to control his circumstances. But maybe he's finally ready to stop allowing his circumstances to grind him down. Maybe he's ready to wake up. The end.
Not whole, not wholly, separate but syncopated, single in our nature and because of the times. Not a word was said when the lights came on or a glance given pause at the cost of our desired wrongs. It's second nature to love you, it's first to die, and we were killed upon waking. Killed upon waking to the life we weren't prepared to live or about to realize. We were killed upon the pavement. Bonnie was-